Today we're going to look at the life and the contribution of the individual who is known by the name of his classic Hasidic commentary, Toldos Yankiv Yosef, which is really a phrase extracted from one of the psukim in the Torah, where it says Ela Toldos Yankiv. It goes on to say Yosef, goes on to talk about when it speaks about the history of Yaakov, so it goes into the events surrounding Yaakov's second to youngest son Yosef. So the juxtaposition of those terms, or the contiguity of those terms, Toldos Yankiv Yosef. So he named his sefer on a commentary on Torah. He called it Toldos Yankiv Yosef. And the reason that he called it that is because his name was Yankiv Yosef, and he sought to incorporate his name into the title of this work. Subsequently, he left a number of other svarim, some of which were still printed during his lifetime. One was called Kesenas Pasim, which is again taken from the coat of many colors which Yaakov made for his son Yosef. He called one Bein Peiros Yosef, a phrase which is taken from the bracha which was given to Yosef, and one he called Tzafnas Paneach, which the Pharaoh, it's a name which the Pharaoh gave to Yosef, which means someone who is able to reveal things which are hidden. That's the name that the Pharaoh gave to Yosef after Yosef interpreted his dreams. All of these svarim comprise much of the foundation information which we have from the founder of Hasidus, from the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov himself did not leave any written works, and so we have nothing from his own pen, virtually nothing from his own pen. And what we do have is that which was transmitted by his disciples and that which was recorded by his disciples and their disciples. And there is a very substantial body of commentary which appears distributed throughout the early Hasidic works, but the lion's share of the Baal Shem Tov's observations, commentaries, his tenets of perspective and faith and bitachin were captured by his disciple Rabbi Yankiv Yosef, and it is to him that most of the Hasidic world is indebted for what we know of the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov. So the place of Rabbi Yankiv Yosef, as he's called, the Toldos, is one which is greatly venerated in the annals of Hasidic history, and he is a personality which draws a fair amount of attention. His full name was Rabbeinu Yankiv Yosef HaKohen Katz. As you know, the last name Katz is an abbreviation. It comes from two words. It's spelled in Hebrew, Chaf Tzadik. And the Chaf and the Tzadik invariably have some grammatical notation between the two letters to denote the fact that it is not an ordinary name, that the two letters of the name, the Chaf and the Tzadik, really correspond to two words. It means Kohen Tzadik. So invariably, when you see the name Katz, you would have good reason to assume that that person is a Kohen, especially if they spell the name with the two little apostrophes between the two letters. Our newly acquired son-in-law is named Katz, but it's a name which was borrowed in order to get out of Europe and to get into this country, so he's not a Kohen. What? I have to talk louder. Rabbeinu Yankiv Yosef HaKohen was born in the year Tov Samach Hei. There are some works on Hasidic biographies that aren't quite certain about the date of his birth, and some even attribute his birth date some years earlier and insist that the Teildus himself was older than the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov was born either in 1698 or, according to some versions, in 1700. But it seems that this date of 1705 of Tov Samach Hei is a fairly reliable statistic, and it at least gives us a very close approximation of the beginnings of Rabbi Yankiv Yosef's life. He was born to his father, Rav Tzvi Katz, and very quickly, even as a youth, began to shine as a prodigy. He was particularly gifted intellectually, had an extraordinary ability to remember everything which he set his eyes upon. He was a very devout and pious soul, and in his earliest years was already deeply respected by people many times older than himself. Early on, in his early adult life, he became the rabbi of Rashkov, which is someplace in the general vicinity of what's on the other side of the ocean there. And from there became rabbi of Sharigrad. I think that's the way you pronounce it. I'm not great on geography, and I'm certain that people in Russia would not be likely to pronounce Milwaukee correctly the first time they took a shot at it. But I believe that correct pronunciation is Sharigrad. And in Sharigrad, he attained a reputation which went throughout the scholarly world of Europe, Russia, Poland, as one of the finest young scholars of his time, a halachist par excellence, and an individual of enormous discipline and asceticism. It was an individual who gave no quarter to any of the physical pleasures. He fasted extensively, would immerse himself every day without exception in the cold waters of the springs of the area, including the brutal winter months when it meant breaking the ice in order to be able to proceed with these immersions. And he stood, even as a young adult rabbi, in a position of particular veneration. He had heard about this this new this new phenomenon, the phenomenon of Hasidus, about the leader of Hasidus of Bnei Yisrael, Baal Shem Tov. And his initial response was to join ranks with all of those who were vigorously opposed to Hasidus, and he saw in all of its ways things that made him wary and skeptical about its authenticity, about its right to claim a continuity from the earlier traditions of Klal Yisrael. And so he viewed it with skepticism and with some bitterness. And at the same time, because of the fact that he was an individual who had a passionate commitment to truth, there was always something which insisted that he had to test it himself, that there might be some possibility that he was missing something that would lead him to a higher level of avoda, to a higher level of service. And if there was anything that Rabbi Yankiv Yosef was about, it was the service of the Almighty. And he would collect things that he would hear and would file them away. He would question them, he would dismiss them. But he became increasingly curious, increasingly provoked by this phenomenon, and sought in some way to put his mind and his heart at rest. His fame and the respect in which he was held can perhaps in some small measure be noted by the fact that when he did his first shidduch with a daughter, that the mechutin that sought him out was one of the Chachmei Brod. There was in the city of Brod, there was a kloiz. And in that kloiz, there was a besmedr shakolel. And some of the foremost scholars, some of the great Talmudic geniuses of the time were members of that kloiz. One of them, who was particularly noted, was Reb Chaim Tzanza. There are some responses in the Neid B'Yehuda between himself and Reb Chaim Tzanza, and you see the great respect which the Neid B'Yehuda, who was one of history's greatest halachic authorities, the respect in which he held this Reb Chaim Tzanza. Reb Chaim Tzanza had a son, Reb Tzvi, who became a son-in-law of Rabbi Yankiv Yosef. He was a person who was extremely orderly, as we indicated, a very disciplined person, a person who was in the fullest measure in control of his fate. One biography tells us that he was committed every day to learning at least 7 blot of the Gemara, such that every single year he completed the entirety of Shas. He would complete Shishe Sidre Mishnah, all 6 sections of Mishnayos, once a month. He had a regular Seder in Shalah HaKodesh, which I think entailed some 36 dafim every day. In any event, he was an individual whose devotion to Torah study was boundless and was firmly directed by a person of immense stature. There are many stories, some of which are just simply go beyond the scope of these sessions. He had already had one experience in which he learned on a first-hand basis about a remarkable sequence of events from the Baal Shem HaKodesh, and he had filed that away carefully so that, despite the fact that there was no real way for him to explain what was clearly a very wondrous event, nonetheless, he did not allow a single event to take him away from a position which he felt was one which was supported by the Rav Gedel Yisrael of his time, the majority of the leaders of European Jewry at the time, and one which he felt could not be easily shaken. The stories surrounding his hiskarvus, the stories that tell us how he eventually became the chief scribe and one of the closest of the Baal Shem HaKodesh's disciples seems to border on, again, there are many, many stories, some which may not be reliable, and I've tried to choose the ones that I think are likely to be closest to the truth. There's one account which tells us the following, that one of his strongest supporters in Shahrigrad was an individual who was closely allied with the Baal Shem HaKodesh. This individual was very generous. This individual was someone who he felt very close to, and it happened so that this individual, whose name was Rameir, that Rameir did a shidduch with someone from Mezhbish, and the wedding was in Mezhbish, which was the city where the Baal Shem HaKodesh held court. He was very torn. On the one hand, he very much wanted to go to this wedding, and on the other hand, he had some very profound anxieties about meeting with the Baal Shem Tov and the possibility that he might be swayed, and in his mind, perhaps not justly swayed by his charisma, but by whatever. So he refused the invitation to go to the wedding, and this Rameo said to him, Rabbi, I want you to officiate. I want you to be the Masada Kedushin. I've counseled with my Rebbe, with the Baal Shem Tov, and he is in full agreement that you should be the one to officiate. And if you wouldn't come, this would be a source of great humiliation and embarrassment to me that the rabbi of my community would not attend my wedding. So that last argument was one which he could not dismiss. And he ended up going to Mezhbish, and immediately after the chuppah, the Baal Shem Tov wasn't there at the chuppah, immediately after the chuppah, in anticipation of the arrival of the Baal Shem Tov, he slipped out. And his hope was is that he would leave, and then maybe the Baal Shem Tov would come and would spend a short time there, and the Baal Shem Tov would then leave, and he would be able to return to participate in the rest of the wedding. And so he took a walk through the meadows, the fields of Mezhbish. And when he felt that it might be the appropriate time, he returned and he looked inside and he saw that the Baal Shem Tov, surrounded by many of the guests who were crowding around him was delivering some sort of homily on whatever. His curiosity got the best of him, and he put his ear to the window. And just as he put his ear to the window, the Baal Shem Tov stopped in the middle of his commentary and said, "I'm going to interrupt my remarks now because it's very important that I tell you a story." And he proceeded to tell the following story. He said, there is a rabbi in the environs of your community. He didn't want to say that it was he said it's somewhere in the general vicinity of your community. There is a rabbi, and he is a God-fearing individual. And it happened that on Erev Pesach, his Rebbetzin was busy trying to get the house in order. And wherever she would move to clean something, he was in the way. And so she finally was constrained to ask him to leave the house. So he left the house and he sat outside. It was Erev Pesach. And it happened to be an unseasonably hot day. And he sat outside, and he was parched. He didn't dare walk into the house because he knew that that might bring a swift end to what would be his hopes for longevity. And on the other hand, he didn't have where to go without really traveling some distance, and that would be a bittul Torah. And he treasured every moment. So he was tortured by his thirst, and it was intruding upon his capacity to study. And just then the water carrier passed through, and he called out to him. It was a simple balabos, a water carrier, and he called out to him and he said, "Hey, water carrier, stop." And the man continued. And so he called out to him a second time, and a second time the man ignored him, until finally he declared, "Water carrier, the rabbi of Rashkev orders you to stop and to return." Or the rabbi of Shavinkan. At which point the man stopped, came back to him, and he said to him, "How dare you? Three times I called out to you, twice I called out to you, and you refused to stop." And he was very upset, and he really tore into this fellow for his chutzpah and his lack of respect and so on. And the Baal Shem Tov continued. He said, "This rabbi didn't know a number of things. Number one, he had no way of knowing that this water carrier was one of the 36 hidden righteous people. And second of all, he should have imagined that whoever it was would have had a good reason that it." Generally people don't ignore other people, let alone a scholarly looking gentleman, that this person was relatively new in the vicinity, didn't know that he was the rabbi, and what's more, that the water that he was carrying was water that he had been instructed to bring for the baking of the matzahs, and he was in a hurry to get the water there so that the water wouldn't be in any way contaminated, that it wouldn't get too hot and would be a problem for the matzah bake, and that's why he didn't stop. As Rabbi Yankiv Yosef was listening to this narrative, he broke out in a cold sweat because he recognized the story. It was a story that had occurred with him, and he began to ask himself, how was it possible that Baal Shem Tov could know this story? And then he argued that in all likelihood, this individual, this water carrier, who was one of the Lamed Vav Tzadikim, must have gone himself to repeat the story to the Baal Shem Tov. So that's how he dealt with this very remarkable story. So a few seconds passed, and the Baal Shem Tov said, and now let me tell you another story. He said, there is a rule, avera goreris avera. One sin causes another. And so it was, he said, that this very same rabbi, because he did not think to apologize or to find out what had occurred, that this very same rabbi, on the night of Tisha B'Av, when he had returned from the reading of Eicha, and he sat down to learn the things that you're permitted to learn on Tisha B'Av, that he was overcome with a tremendous thirst. And this extraordinary thirst was overwhelming. And he said, just then, someone entered with a cold pitcher of water, poured it into a glass, and asked him if he wanted it. And he was so crazed by his thirst that he said, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, Yemeinu Bracha Shehakol Nihya B'Dvaro. And at that moment, when he completed the bracha, he remembered that it was Tisha B'Av. So he was immediately overcome by a wave of such remorse and such such self revulsion, in a certain sense. You know, how can I do this on Tisha B'Av? Of course, he didn't drink the water, and he was left with a bracha levatala. He had made a bracha for no reason. Whoever it was that had presented him with the water had disappeared as suddenly as he had appeared. And the Yankiv Yosef, because he didn't say anything, he says the rabbi, he said, was determined that he was going to do tshuva for this, what for him was a great chet. He said, but he was overcome with sleep, and he had a dream. And in the dream, he was walking through the streets of Sharigrad, and he came to the outskirts of town where there was a magnificent garden and orchard, outside of which there was a watchman. He didn't recognize the watchman. He didn't recognize the garden. He didn't recognize the orchard. And so he said to the watchman, whose orchard, whose garden is this? And the watchman said, it belongs to the rabbi of the city. It belongs to Rabbi Yankiv Yosef, the rabbi of Sharigrad. So he said to the watchman, where, from what source would he have been able to acquire such a lavish, beautiful garden and orchard? And the watchman replied, it all came from the bracha which he recited the night of Tisha B'Av. At which point he woke up realizing that out of this bracha that malevolent forces had created a source of power for themselves, and then of course he was one of the primary targets of this new station of unholy influence. Immediately upon the conclusion of Tisha B'Av, he sat down with the Tehillim and began to pour his heart out to the Almighty over this this avera, which had created this this new locus of darkness. And with the passing of every hour, he was informed, I'm not certain by which measure, that parts of this orchard, parts of this garden were being ripped up, were being destroyed. And at first they told him that the leaves of the trees had fallen, and then they told him that the fruit was gone, and then they told him that the branches had fallen, and finally they told him that the entire garden, the entire orchard, was completely annihilated. And so he concluded his penitence. And the Baal Shem Tov continues the story, and he says, but the rabbi should know that despite his efforts, the roots of those trees and those plants are still in the ground. And the only way in which the rabbi will be able to extirpate and destroy those roots is to solicit my advice on how to do that kind of tshuva. And that appears to be the clincher. The Rabbi Yankiv Yosef, of course, recognized that the second story was once again about himself, and here there was no way in which he could attribute the knowledge of everything that took place to someone who squealed, someone who knew about it and told him, because he was the only person in the world who knew about this entire incident. He had not repeated it to anybody. And so he knew that the Spirit of the Almighty was present over here with this this Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov. And from that point forward began to make regular pilgrimages to Mezhbuzh to learn under the Baal Shem Tov and to be guided by his this new force. Amongst the many things which the Baal Shem Tov demanded of him was that he had to give up his self-flagellation, his mortification of the flesh, his fasting, which again there are numerous anecdotes about his refusal to give them up and things which the Baal Shem Tov had to do in order to bring this about. And he was, in the last analysis, he was successful for the most part, but not completely. The Toldos maintained some very some very severe measures of self-denial up until the end of his life. But he had learned enough so that he did not allow anybody who came under his tutelage or mentorship to practice any form of self-denial or mortification of self. One of the popular stories, one that appears in most accounts of the Baal Shem Tov's relationship with the Toldos, is one in which the Baal Shem Tov says to him, and I think you've heard, by the way, you've heard this story from me in a number of different contexts, but the story appears to be traced most legitimately to the Toldos. And that as he was studying under the Baal Shem Tov, that on one occasion the Baal Shem Tov said to him, in the Baal Shem Tov's world view, that there is nothing, not even the movement of a leaf in the wind, a straw, or stubble in the meadow, which the breeze carries from one place to the next, which happens without divine providence, that there is hashgacha pratis, which is exhaustive and addresses every molecule of the universe. So one of the things that the Baal Shem Tov said to him is you must listen to everything. And that sometimes if you hear a comment which appears to be completely irrelevant and may come from a source that is not a particularly exalted source, that nonetheless, if you hear it, then it is relevant to you and it has something which you can learn from. So listen carefully. And as he was teaching him this, one of the non-Jewish workmen of the Mezbech barged in and said, "Rebbe, you have anything to fix today?" And the Baal Shem Tov said, "No, I have no work for you today. Everything is shipshape." So he said to the Baal Shem Tov, he said, "Rebbe, can't be. There must be something which I, which needs repair. So please look around and see if you can find it." So that, and he wanted some work. At which point, Rabbi Yankiv Yosef looked up and saw that the Baal Shem Tov was aflame. And so he said to him, "Rebbe, what's happening?" So he said, "Did you hear what he said?" He said, "I said to him, there's nothing to fix. And he said to me, there is always something to fix. If you look, you will find it." That is a message. That no matter how much we think we have already, in all of our interest to perfect ourselves, that we have done, that if we reflect upon ourselves, and if we examine ourselves, we will find more things that we need to repair. So Rabbi Yankiv Yosef said to the Baal Shem Tov, "Look, you know that I've been a very receptive student." He said, "But I just can't deal with this. That a message of such holiness, that the Almighty would pass it through such a lowly vessel." He said, "I'm not prepared," he said, "to handle that. That God is going to teach me. God teaches me through a holy vessel. If it's a Talmud Chacham, an unlettered Jew who is a Yiras Shamayim. But at least it's. But here's this peasant, this lowly individual." And he said, So the Baal Shem Tov said to him, "Rabbi Yankiv Yosef, you can't accept this. You don't want it." At which point, Rabbi Yankiv Yosef got up and excused himself. And he walked out, and no sooner did he walk out into the street that one of the merchants, again a non-Jewish merchant, called out to him and said to him, "Hey Jew, come and help me load my wagon." He had big bales of whatever it was, merchandise, and he needed help. To which Rabbi Yankiv Yosef responded, "I can't." He looked at the bales, they were very heavy. He said, "I can't do it. They're too heavy." To which the merchant said, "You can, you just don't want to." This was a KO punch. He lit up in gratitude to what had just happened. He went over to help the merchant load up his wagon, found that in fact he could be helpful, and returned to the Baal Shem Tov to inform the Baal Shem Tov that he was prepared to work on accepting this teaching. The stories that, again, in the biographical sketches of Rabbi Yankiv Yosef, relate that even with all of these things, that somehow there was still some uneasiness. that there was some fermentation still going on inside the heart of Rabbi Yankiv Yosef, and he was looking to make his commitment to the Baal Shem Tov total. And on one occasion he resolved that he was going to stay, and that is, he had left Shahrigrad to come to Mezhbish, and that he was going to stay there until he could put these last feelings of unrest, of uncertitude, he could put them to bed. So he stayed there, and these were weeks in which he saw and learned a great deal. And there was no question in his mind that the accusations about the Baal Shem Tov's scholarship were of no account, that they were completely out of the ballpark. There was no question about the Baal Shem Tov's abilities in his Avedas HaTfilah. His davening was beyond description. And there's one account that he was even treated during that visit to Mezhbish, that he even on one occasion saw that the Baal Shem Tov quickened the dead, that there was someone who the Baal Shem Tov restored to life. So he had seen everything, and there was absolutely, and yet he was not at peace. And then on one occasion, he and some of the chavrayas, he and some of the friends went with the Baal Shem Tov on one of his mysterious trips. And as they went through, as they did, they traveled through uncharted places. They ended up in some ungodly place, not ungodly, but it was a wilderness. And the Baal Shem Tov said, we must stop to daven mincha, it's getting late. And as they got off, the Baal Shem Tov said to one of his talmidim, he said, bring the flask with the water so that we can wash our hands before we daven. He came to Kras Hashem, like, Kecha, it's a pasuk, you ready yourself, you prepare. When you come to speak to the king, you don't just walk in. One of the reasons you put on a gautlis, gird your loins, you fulfill the mitzvah of Hikain. Prepare yourself, you do something which makes a statement, I'm doing something different now in preparation for this divine encounter. So he insisted that they, I mean, it turned out that the flask had broken, and this chassid comes and he's holding the shards of this flask in his hand. He said, Rebbe, it's all gone. So he said, well, look around here, there must be some water someplace. And they all went out to scout for some water amongst the trees and the bushes of the forest, and they came back and they all reported that there was nothing that they could find which would serve the purpose. And they stood around in kind of in a semicircle, and the Baal Shem Tov said, well, I can't daven unless I wash my hands. So one of the disciples says, well, Rebbe, it says that if there is no water, that you can rub your hands on something like wood, and that would be a substitute. And the Baal Shem Tov said, I'm not going to daven until I have water. Now, you have to realize that this business about having water is not, it's not in the Torah, it's not a matter of the supreme importance. It's a dikduk. It's a it's a practice which is one of the finer, one of the more exquisite kinds of expressions of people are interested in doing things in the ideal way. And so the curiosity of Rabbi Yankiv Yosef was particularly over here provoked, because he felt that this might at long last give him the insight into the Baal Shem Tov's the total integrity of the Baal Shem Tov vis-a-vis the many accusations that had been leveled against him, and especially the popular accusation that the Chassidim held the Shulchan Aruch in contempt and would do things which were inconsistent with the Shulchan Aruch. And so he watched very carefully, and finally the Baal Shem Tov said, well, since you can't find some, I'll go look for some. And he left them standing there, and no one dared follow him. And he went off into the forest, with the exception, that is, no one dared follow him, with the exception of Yankim Yosef, who felt that this might be his moment of truth. And so he followed him very, very quietly, so that the Baal Shem Tov would not notice that he was being followed. And at long last, when the Baal Shem Tov reached an area which seemed very secluded and obstructed from the view of everybody else, the Baal Shem Tov fell to the ground. And began weeping. And in a voice which was charged with such desperation, he heard the Baal Shem Tov call out, "Master of the world, I want to approach your throne in prayer. But I want to approach your throne in prayer, but I have no water, and I can't initiate this tefillah without first having washed my hands. Master of the universe, do not force me. Do not allow me to have to go without water." As he heard this petition, he heard the depths of desperation, the profound sincerity of this appeal. The Tuldus was absolutely convinced that the individual who had uttered this prayer was someone who had such uncompromised reverence for the smallest diktuk of divrei seferim, of anything at all that was part of the halachic structure of Klal Yisrael, that the last traces and vestiges of questions and doubts that had been sort of unsettling him for so many months had completely disappeared. He saw someone whose prayerfulness over the tiniest molecule of halacha was one of as though the world stood on it. Baal Shem Tov raised himself up, returned to the group who were waiting for him, and said to them, "You know, you just haven't looked carefully. Why don't you try once again?" And they turned around, and not more than a few feet from where they were standing, there was a small fountain, a spring that was bubbling out of the thing. No one could understand why they hadn't noticed it before, but they were able to wash their hands and they were able to daven. And from that point forward, the Tuldus was a firm and confirmed disciple of the Baal Shem Tov, second to none, and became this scribe and the recorder of every syllable that he heard from the Baal Shem Tov. When the Baal Shem Tov passed away, there was no question that he was not the heir apparent, for a variety of reasons, not the least of which was the fact that being a Kohen, that one of his character traits, which is widely attributed to being a Kohen, that Kohanim are Kapdonim. They're irritable, that they have a penchant to allow their anger to intrude upon many situations, and there was concern about the fact that person of his severity of his kabdanus could not really be a leader of such a such a movement. By this time, by the way, I haven't told you this, as he became a disciple of the Baal Shem Tov, Sharigrad, which was a citadel of a fortress of Hisnagdus, became aware of his new affiliation, and one Erev Shabbos, they drove him out of the city. They put all of his furniture and belongings on a wagon, and his wife and children, and they exiled him from the city. And there's a story that revolves around that, which really continues throughout the life of Rabbi Yaakov Yosef. He went from there to become once again rabbi in a community where he had been earlier, the city of Rashkiv, which was a Hasidic community, although it was a community where he lived in great poverty. And there was some question in many minds about whether he would be able to recognize and accept the leadership of the Magid of Mezrich, who had been appointed as the successor to the Baal Shem Tov. And here again, there is a very wonderful story. But the bottom line of the story is that the Toldus became very upset with something that someone had told him about the Magid. He hopped on a wagon, journeyed to Mezhbish, arrived on either a Thursday or on a Friday morning, and as he alighted from the wagon, the Magid rushed out to greet him with great covet and honor, because everyone revered and respected the Toldus. And he said to him immediately, "What brings you to Mezrich?" And he immediately launched into this criticism. The Magid defended himself, and the anger of the Toldus was appeased. And that very moment, even though he had just been concluded a very exhausting trip, he said, "I want to go back. I want to be home for Shabbos." And the Magid prevailed upon him to stay for Shabbos. At the conclusion of Shabbos, it's related that the Toldus lifted his hands heavenward and said, "Ribbono shel Olam, I see that the sanctity which we found once in Mezhbish picked itself up, packed its suitcases, and traveled to Mezrich." And with that, the entire Hasidic movement had the imprimatur, the haskama, that the Toldus himself, no less a figure in Hasidus than the Toldus, had given his blessing to the leadership of the Mezrich Magid. He moved to Nemerov, I believe it was in Tuf Kuf Gimel, whatever that comes out to, 19, it comes out 19, it comes out to, 1743. And was there for many, many years in Nemrov. Before he moved to Nemrov, because of his desire now to be close to the Magid of Mezrich, there was an opportunity to assume a rabbonus in the city of Ostro. I don't know where Ostro is, but it's in Volin, which was not far from Volin as an entire region. In Russia, there are gubernias, which are like regions or states. There's Kiva Gubernia, Volina Gubernia. So He wanted to be in Volin, and a position had opened up there because the rabbi of Ostro, Reb Yehuda Leib, had passed away. And so he came into Ostro and announced to the Tuvei Ha'ir his interest to be considered as a candidate for the Rabbanus. And when a person of his stature appeared, it was something which was very little chance that it was going to be denied. Now, in the interests of doing this fairly, he went to the home of the widow of the rabbi who had passed on and asked for permission to put his name as a candidate. There was a surviving son of the previous rabbi whose name was Rabbi Yankiv Yosef, and in deference to the personage who had come, he and his mother, the widow, readily acceded that the Toldis should be the legitimate candidate for the Rabbonos. And so he appeared in an interview before the Tuvei Ha'ir, and they were, of course, very struck. But they told him that they could not reach a final decision without consulting one of their balabatim. Now, this was a very unusual arrangement. He was not a member of the elders of the city, and he was not a rabbi. But this particular balabais, who goes nameless in the literature, was someone who was known to be a person of unsurpassed piety, was believed to be amongst the hidden righteous, and so nothing in Ostro of any consequence would happen without his okay. And so they went to him, they said to him, the famous rabbi of Nemirov, Rabbeinu Yankiv Yosef Katz, is here, wants to be considered for the rabbinate. Everybody's very impressed. The widow of the previous rabbi and the family give their permission. What is your opinion? So he said, inasmuch as you're soliciting my opinion is that you should not do it, and I will give it neither my blessing nor my approval. And so they returned to inform the Toldis that his candidacy had reached a dead end and that they were compelled to refuse it. Being the captain, being the irritable person that he was, he announced that he was going to leave the community immediately, and someone ran very quickly to inform the family of the former rabbi of what had transpired, and the young son of the former rabbi rushed out to escort the Toldis out of the community. And as they sat together on the wagon, the Toldis made some very critical remarks about this community, Ostro, in which he felt he had been humiliated. To which this young man responded and said to him, Rabbi, why are you so angry? So he said, well, in addition to my embarrassment, I must tell you that I heard a heavenly proclamation that the legitimate Rav of the city is Rabbeinu Yankiv Yosef. So he said, so you've defied not only my candidacy, but you've defied the heavenly court. At which point, this young man, who was a very humble young man, said to him, Rabbi, did the heavenly echo that you heard say Rabbeinu Yaakov Yosef HaKohen, or just Rabbi Yankiv Yosef? So he stopped, he said, well, as a matter of fact, it said just Rabbi Yankiv Yosef. At which point, the young man said to him, well, allow me to introduce myself. My name is Yaakov Yosef. And instantaneously, the Toldos turned, ordered that the wagon be turned around, returned to the community, and insisted that this young man be coronated as its new Rav, in deference to the heavenly echo. This Balabayas, this Lamed Vovnik, this person whom the elders of the community always took counsel with, was there, and enthusiastically gave his approval to this choice. And this Rabbeinu Yankiv Yosef eventually became one of the Gedalia Hasidus, who was popularly known as Rabbeyevi. This Rabbeyevi was one of the stars of the early Hasidic movement. As an act of recognition and to some extent apology, the Toldos gave this newly coronated young rabbi a gift of a wine goblet, a glass wine goblet, and gave him his blessings and left the community. Many years later, the Toldos did get a chance to move to Pulna. The city of Pulna was where ultimately he passed away and is known as Rabbi Yankiv Yosef HaKohen from Pulna. The rabbi before him was the Meichiach, the one who was known as the admonisher from Pulna, was one of his closest companions and friends, and before the Meichiach passed away, he gave instructions that the Toldos be given the rabbinate after him. In the meanwhile, the Toldos began, while he was living in Amarov, to record his work on the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov and his own commentary on Torah, the first work, which is the Toldos, and then went around trying to sell it. He came on one occasion to Bardichev, and there were no buyers. And once again, being the Kohen that he was and the captain that he was, his feelings about Bardichev were less than charitable. And visiting Bardichev at the time was the Eir HaMeir, Reb Wolf, Reb Zev from Zhytomyr, the author of the Eir HaMeir, he was a disciple of the Magid of Mizritch, and one of the very powerful and classic works of Hasidus. And he was there, and he sensed that something very, very ominous was hovering above Bardichev, and he quickly made his way to the marketplace where this old man, the Toldos himself, was standing with his svarim, and said to him, What's going on? So he said, I've been standing here since early morning, and not more than one or two people purchased my sefer. So the Rameo said to him, the Wolf said to him, and for this you're going to decree such a harsh fate upon the Jews of Bardichev? So he said, don't they deserve it? So the Rameo said to him, are you greater than the Almighty? So he said, what do you mean? He said, well, you remember the Medrash that when God wanted to give the Torah, that he went to all the nations of the world and they didn't want to buy it. He didn't destroy the world. So he said, if the Almighty wanted to sell the Torah and couldn't sell it and didn't destroy the world, then it seems to me that the rabbi of Pulna should not destroy this community if they don't want to buy his sefer. It was the right reprimand at the right time, and the Toldos and his irritability was put to rest. Some 4 years before he passed away, during the holiday of Sukkot, the Toldos became very weak, and he collected about him, his family. He said to them, look, he said, my teacher, the Baal Shem Tov, told me that I would not pass away before I had seen Simchas Torah. He said, which to me implies that it will be the day after Simchas Torah, and that I will not pass away before I am removed from my position as rabbi. He said, I am feeling very, very weak. He said, and I suspect that my end is drawing near. And as Simchas Torah approached, he became bedridden and was barely conscious. In the city of Ostra, many, many miles away, in the home of Rabbi Yevi's daughter, Rabbi Yankiv Yosef of Ostra, was setting the table, and she was setting the goblet to the head of the table, where her father ordinarily sat, which was the goblet which was so treasured by her father, because it was a gift from Rabbi Yankiv Yosef, and she put it down, and it was unsteady. The goblet fell and shattered, and she immediately fainted because she knew what this meant to her father. And there was a great hubbub in the house, and Rabbi Yevi came into the house and said, what's going on? And they told him that there was this very unfortunate accident which this treasured goblet broke. So he exclaimed, "Apach nishbar v'anachnu nimlotnu." He said, the trap, in this case, pach, is the goblet. The goblet is broken, and we are saved. And with the conclusion of Simchas Torah, he immediately asked if there was anyone traveling to Berdichev who was present at the Akofis. And there was a guest there, and he said to him, look, you're going to Berdichev. As you're traveling to Berdichev, you'll go through Pulnoa. I want you to stop and go into the rabbi of Pulnoa, and no matter what it takes for you to get through to him, you are to say to him, "Hapach nishbar v'anachnu nimlotnu," the goblet is broken and we are saved. And so the following morning, the Chevra Kadisha were already in the house. They were surrounding the bed of the toldos, and he was in a state in which he was not responding, and he broke through and whispered into his ear, the Yevi of Ostra told me that I should tell you that the goblet that you gave him years ago, that it broke. Hapach nishbar v'anachnu nimlot. At which point, the Teldus opened up his eyes, and his face brightened. And a number of hours later, he began to recover strength, and he returned to his Rabbanus for another 4 years. In the year Tavkuf Mem Dalet, 1784, he was returning from the Hakofes on Simchas Torah, and he was surrounded by an entire entourage of his disciples and Balabatim. And of course it was Simchas Torah, and so some of the townspeople had allowed themselves to drink and make merry, and there was a group of ne'er-do-wells who were singing and dancing in the streets, and as the toldos past them, he called out to what was apparent was the leader of the group, and he said to him, what are you rejoicing about? So the fellow called out to him. He was drunk. So he called out to him, it's Simchas Torah, we're rejoicing with the Torah. So he said to him, well, what right have you to rejoice with the Torah? He said, when do you ever open up a book? Rabbi Yankiv Yosef was a Kohen, so his remarks were sometimes more pointed than they or couched in more pointed terms. So this fellow, again in his drunkenness, said, Rebbe, he said, at a wedding, he said, there's the chosen and the kala, and they're the main celebrants. But all of the members of the extended family and the guests all rejoice, even though they're not getting married. So he said, it's true that we don't study, he says, but you study, and we're mechatanim. At which point, the told us who was always open to the truth, broke into laughter, and he said, you've bested me. At which point this fellow said to him, if I've bested you, then, of course, he was intoxicated, so he says, if I've bested you, then it's a sign that you're no longer worthy to be Rebbe of this community, so I am dismissing you from the rabbinate, and I'm occupying that position. And of course, everybody laughed, but the Toldos turned white, because he recognized that the Baal Shem Tov's sign had finally come to pass. The following day in Ischuchag, the soul of Rabbi Yankiv Yosef HaKohen was restored to its maker, and this giant of the Hasidic movement was brought to rest, I believe, in Pulna, next to his friend, the previous Rav of Pulna, the Meichiach. The legacy of the Teildus is one which we will continue in our next session, when we will talk a little bit about some of the Teildus and perhaps some other interesting anecdotes surrounding his life.